Hey guys, and welcome back to the Pressures Off podcast from the student ministry at Grace Church in Wichita Falls, Texas. Students are under constant pressure to perform, to fit in, to measure up, but in Christ, the pressure's off. And we have Jeff and Blake back to continue our small two-episode series on the Great Commandment.
Part two.
And so we'll be talking a little later about what it means to love your neighbor as yourself. But before we get to that, I've got my icebreaker for you guys.
Here we go.
All right.
And we just celebrated the 4th of July. And in light of that, did y'all go watch fireworks?
Yeah.
No. Well, no, actually I did. Sorry. Yeah.
Like, you just forgot about it?
Yeah.
Where did you go?
Let's see. Well, we kind of just pulled up. We didn't go to the country club, but we pulled up to like Hamilton Park where you can kind
pull
of
up,
watch
dude.
Him without going to the country club.
Yeah.
And so we did that for like 10 minutes. We weren't there the whole time.
We did the same thing. We just benefited from their generosity.
Oh, you were there?
Well, not exactly there. We were elsewhere.
Okay. Watching the same thing.
Yeah.
You can see the sky. 10 minutes? You gave it 10 minutes?
Yeah. What did he say? He said, you can see the sky.
I didn't have to be right there.
Yes. He didn't have to be right where we were. He just had to look up. Everybody could be a part of it.
So why did you leave after 10 minutes?
No. We just got there for the last like.
Oh, you minutes. Literally like
yeah.
drove, it was like a drive-by watching.
You just went, kind of, yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, I mean, how cool is that?
We stopped and pulled over and.
No, you just kept driving, just real fast.
Okay. What did you do?
I was at the lake.
Oh, did you watch fireworks?
Saturday night, we couldn't stay for the lake's fireworks show, but we got lucky because Friday night, the lake house, like right next to ours, a little over, but they had an awesome fireworks show. A really, really cool one. And Micah surprised me because Micah is my son. He's only 19 months old. But all my other kids at that age hated fireworks. And we're right under them. Like, they're shooting off these huge fireworks right over us. And every time they went off, Micah would clap and say, dang. more. It's great. Had a blast.
It's good. Little Caleb.
Yes. So in light of that.
Yeah.
In light of everything we've just said. The question is this. It's not really a question. It's more of a prompt. Create your own firework. Okay, so just imagine you are in the greatest firework lab that exists, which is probably like the U.S. military, where they make bombs.
Are those fireworks?
Very, very intricate fireworks. You're in the best firework lab that exists, wherever that is. You can create as intricate of a firework as you'd like. What happens when it goes boom? when it goes off, what's the firework you've created?
So for me, my least favorite part of the 4th of July is like this gradual ramp up of fireworks. Mm. Like people in my neighborhood start setting them off like one on the 1st and then a couple on the 2nd, and then a little on the 3rd, and then they really go at it on the 4th, and then it's like,
sorry,
we have some leftovers on the 5th,
yeah.
And then like, oh, look, we found some more in the closet on the 6th.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be one or two, you know, tonight
mm-hmm.
to go off.
Yeah.
My favorite firework thing to see ever was like 15 years ago on the internet. It was in San Diego. What was supposed to be a 20-minute show because of a technical glitch all went off in like 30 seconds.
Mm.
It was like the world was ending, and the people
awesome.
That were there were like, this is the best thing I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
So if I could make a firework, it would be one that just goes boom and is like everything you ever wanted, and you would feel totally satisfied having seen it. You wouldn't feel shorted or anything. It's just like boom.
I was joking about building your firework in like the military.
No,
but you are building a bomb.
Like just shy of killing people. Like
Jeff is like the most my favorite firework. If I could build one, it would be it'd be a nuclear bomb.
Well, you know, good news, they've done that.
Yes,
they have.
Yes.
Yep.
I think so. Similar to that, I saw a video of. I guess kind of maybe these guys were at the end and they had so many fireworks left. And so they took like a, I don't know, it wasn't like a flamethrower, but something. And they just ran over to whatever pile of fireworks they had left, set it all on fire, and then just started running in the opposite way. And so it just all started, it looked really dangerous, but really fun.
Yeah.
And that's not really creating a firework, but it's kind of one of those situations of, man, I wish I could have been there. Mm-hmm. Wish I could have been the guy running up there and just, I don't know, throwing some flames on that and then running away. And
yeah.
On the second thing was, I remember we were at a fireworks show. I don't know if it was for 4th of July, but there was a Disney World fireworks show. And at the very end of it, you know, the grand finale goes crazy.
Yeah.
And then it's just black and you see the smoke. And then you hear, it's like this delayed, you hear all of the fireworks, just this loud, like thunderous sound, but there's nothing, you can't see anything. And so just that effect was really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
That's
but
awesome.
It was just a sound.
We were all kind of on the same page. I just wanted the biggest firework possible.
Yeah.
And that's why I was laughing, because there's something, I guess, innate within us that just wants to build a bomb
and set it all on fire.
Just set things on fire
and run away from it.
There's a kind of firework called a cannonade, which is the one that, like, the whole sky just turns white. It's not even pretty.
Yeah.
And then a minute later, it, like, punches you in the chest.
Yes.
Like that. But all of them at the same
time. You know what would be cool, though, is if you could drop fireworks from... from like an airplane.
You know, they've done that too.
That's what they did.
Conversation. we're getting eerily close to just promoting,
nothing,
you know,
new under the sun.
Yeah. Oh man, that is funny. You know what also be cool though is like if we kind of went just chaos, but if one exploded and it created like an image.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. They
the dragon.
Yeah, the dragon that flies. Like, if on 4th of July, if it went off, and then there's just like a bald eagle flapping its wings.
So I thought about some of that when you asked the question, and I was like, no. I just get one.
I just want chaos.
I get one. I'm going to go for it.
All right. That's fun. Well, guys, let's jump into our game. All right, the game is Price Check. Very easy game. I'm just going to give you guys some things and see how much you would estimate this would cost on average. I had to do an average because I will tell you, some of these things, the price is all over the map.
Oh, have you researched these?
I personally researched these. Yeah, my search history would look strange. Yeah. Right,
that's a fun history to look at.
It would look very strange. But I did my research. I know... on average, how much these things would cost.
Okay.
So I've got it here. And so we're going to start with the first one.
Are we keeping score?
Sure. We can.
Like,
we can.
This is for something. We're not just.
What do you want? What do you want from me, Jeff?
Honor.
You'll get honor. Okay. If you win,
He wants a firework.
Yeah. My respect.
I want my firework.
Make my firework happen. Okay, first one is a healthy adult female giraffe.
As opposed to a giraffe that's not healthy.
See, it gets...
And males are priced differently, I guess.
Correct. See, I had to be specific because, again, the price is all over the map here. Healthy adult female giraffes, they brought in a certain price.
So
a sickly male child giraffe works in.
You do?
So close.
That's common knowledge.
Yeah, it's.
But this one,
we all.
I mean, everybody knows.
Everybody.
It goes without saying.
Listen, if I, I can't stop. If I had a nickel for every time I brought up how much a sickly younger giraffe costs,
you'd have enough to pay for a healthy female giraffe.
Probably. All right. So, healthy adult female giraffe.
U.S. dollars. $27,000.
I like the specificity.
I'm going to go up. I'm going to say 63,000.
I also appreciate the specificity. The answer is $250,000.
Whoa.
And you want to know something? You could purchase this. I mean, not that you guys just have 250K just lying around to spend on this, but you can actually go online and go to exotic giraffe breeders and just purchase a female giraffe.
So when you're checking all the boxes of like healthy adult female, is that the top of the line model?
These are going to be the females that can reproduce.
Yeah,
you know,
more than...
Yes, okay. Top of the line is like, this is the top of the line giraffe. You can get a baby giraffe actually for, you know, $40,000.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You know, so if
I was still short.
Baby giraffe. A healthy adult male, about 90 grand.
Okay.
So yeah, those females, they bring in a premium. All right.
You said $250,000.
$250,000.
Okay.
Yep. Wow. Okay. Next up is a porta potty. Just your standard issued porta potty.
Yeah, nothing fancy.
Yes, not fancy. This is not those ones you would rent at like an outdoor venue, you know, you want a wedding reception. That just came to mind, by the way.
Wedding reception.
Wait, okay, pause. I realize.
Have you considered the porta potty?
I realize how specific that was. At my wedding at my wedding reception, there wasn't like public restrooms. So we actually did rent luxury mobile porta potty, and they were nice. They're very nice. So yeah, standard issue porta potty.
To buy to own, right? Not correct. We're not renting this.
This is your porta potty. You now have it.
$500.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't have any frame of
$4,000.
$4,995. $4,000 over here. $500.
Yeah. I mean, come on. $5,000.
The answer
better
is
be nice.
The answer is $1,000.
Oh.
So point Blake.
I should have done the Price is Right thing.
Technically, Blake's up 2-0 right now.
He's been because I was still severely under $250,000 for the healthy
you were
adult
closer
female
though.
Giraffe. But
okay, next one. The country of Australia.
The whole thing.
On average.
Listen, to be fair, this you can't actually, you know.
Yeah, I was about to say, I question whatever source you got this from.
ChatGPT helped me with this one. You can't purchase Australia, but if you could, it would probably be around this price here.
So I guess that would be like if you could purchase everything.
The GDP of Australia.
In Australia and every parcel of land in Australia.
Yes, like land, how much it produces, how much money it brings in, those sorts of things.
$10 billion.
$700 billion.
Y'all are so low.
Wow.
So low. The answer is $22.5 trillion.
Wow.
I guess that does make way more sense.
I was significantly
you said $10 billion.
Yeah,
dollars?
That's stupid.
You just think your average billionaire on the street can write a check for the country of Australia?
When you think
Australia?
About it, like there's plenty of.
A lot of Australia is like dirt.
I know,
the
but
whole
it's
middle
nice
of
dirt.
It.
It's good dirt.
It's premium dirt.
It's not for sale either. But
down under has.
What did you say again?
$22.5 trillion.
$22.5 trillion.
It said it'd be anywhere between 20 and 25.
So point
I was way closer than you were.
You were way closer.
Bonus points, New Zealand. If you purchase New Zealand, quick, 5 seconds.
Oh, it's got to be almost at least half that.
$10 trillion.
Yeah, 10.5.
About $3.5 trillion.
What?
Yeah, I don't think it doesn't. Bring in quite as much money as Australia does.
It's prettier.
It is prettier. All right, next one. A space-ready suit. Again, on average, there's a lot of debate, by the way.
Like an astronaut suit.
An astronaut suit. But as I researched this, I will say it was kind of all over the map because the research that went into creating a suit is honestly kind of astronomical. So this is as if they began producing them to sell.
So we're not paying for the R&D.
Correct. You get this suit, you could put it on.
It's on a rack at
And
Target.
You'll be safe on the
on a rack at Target.
Yeah, this would be on just
it's
your everyday
rack.
It's the
up and up version.
Yeah. Just.
Should we buy the generic space suit? Or?
I don't know. It's got 4.5 stars.
You know it's
reviews.
Crazy?
It's probably fine.
So
maybe we're not that far from that, you know?
$35,000.
I was going to say something similar. I was going to go 25.
Okay. $12 million.
$12 million at Target?
Guys, they are bad at this. Whoever's listening, they are bad at this.
I'm way closer.
I mean,
I'm $10,000 closer.
I would think $12 million if you were paying for the R&D.
Yeah,
well,
like to develop
it. The R&D is like hundreds of millions of dollars.
Wow.
That's why I was saying like $12 million was actually the low end. I felt I was actually
$12 million. Yeah. Okay, so that costs more than a female giraffe, healthy adult female giraffe.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Which I guess.
Which one would you rather have?
I don't know.
It's a toss up between a giraffe and a space ready suit. All right, next one.
Buy a lot of porta potties with that money.
You could, with $12 million.
Yeah.
You could outfit. Whole town with porta potties.
What a porta potty!
What?
You could put a port, and moving on. Taylor Swift tickets on average.
First sale or like scalped later through? Is it taking all that into account?
And
like
where?
StubHub?
I don't know if my research went quite that.
What about proximity? Is this like nosebleeds? Is this?
Remember, this is average.
Okay. Why not?
So it'll be taking all of those. True. And then
2,500.
Okay.
I'll go 1,500.
$1,200.
Oh.
Yeah. $1,200.
Oh, look at that.
Wow.
It was actually like 1,100 to 1,500. So okay. I just kind of went somewhere in the middle. But yeah, nice.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he's up, Jeff.
It's close. He's up.
I don't know how close he is.
He's up by one.
He has Australia.
Oh, that's right. All right, next one. How much would a real Tyrannosaurus Rex skeleton cost you?
Bones.
You had a large house, a house big enough to just set this skeleton
go to
up.
Go to the museum and buy it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to go.
Well, this, I will say, I got this price from an auction that sold.
One was sold.
Yes.
$2 million.
$3 million.
$30 million.
Whoa. Wow.
They love
I'm
their
a million closer
man.
Than you are.
Yeah.
Rex skeletons. Yeah. $30 million. That's crazy.
I need to start just adding more money to my guesses here.
Yep. I mean,
by the million.
You know, this isn't real relevant information. This won't help you in life, but it's funny. Antarctica is always hard for me to say. Antarctica expedition. So this is for one.
Okay. How long?
This is a fun, it's a decent Antarctica vacation.
That question frustrated you.
See the sights.
You're going to have a good time in Antarctica.
That didn't answer my question, though.
How long?
The significant?
Let's say 10 days.
10 days.
Travel, shelter, food.
Yeah. You'll be taken care of in Antarctica.
1.5 million.
Whoa.
Wow.
Okay. Okay. Antarctica expedition for 10 days.
One person.
I'm going to go $125,000.
Oh, jeez. 30 grand.
30 grand?
What? Wow. What?
Granted, I told you. Listen, you can't blame me. I started by saying there's debate. Okay. It's all over the map. It was actually, this was a hard one. They said.
You went in the millions.
I will. He did. I will say a luxury Antarctica expedition was like around 100 grand. Like a luxury one. So even then.
I'm not sure.
Jeff's taking 15 of his friends on a luxury Antarctica.
There's luxury in Antarctica. It's like little insulated orange shacks that people
stay. He's finding the best igloo available.
Okay.
30 grand for your, you know, decent vacation in Antarctica. Okay, next up. A pet sloth.
A healthy adult female sloth.
Yeah.
This is just an average sloth.
Hey, just a sloth.
All sloths.
Your standard issued sloth.
Target.
If Target had a pet section.
$4,000.
I see what you're doing there.
Okay, so the giraffe was 250.
They're way taller.
They are way taller, yes.
And faster.
Sloths, yes. You can cuddle, though. You can cuddle a sloth. I mean, I don't know, actually. Are sloths mean? I have no idea.
I'm going to go. So you can actually buy one?
You can buy a sloth. Yeah. Newsflash, you can buy quite a few animals. It would surprise you.
I'm going to go 2,500.
Okay. 10 grand. There you go.
Okay. Little baby.
You can have your own sloth for as low as $10,000. All right, next up. I just realized I forgot to add a price of one of these.
Mm.
Oh, no. That's not good. All right, that's fine. All right, next up is a fire truck. Now, this fire truck is going to pull into the station, and it's ready to be used.
Ladders and hoses.
Yes.
I'm going to say
it's outfitted.
$200,000.
Mm, $200,001.
Okay.
He did the prices right.
I think it's 250, but I'm going to go.
$750,000.
Whoa. Wow.
They're nice. Have you seen a fire truck recently?
I have.
I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot going on there.
250 is pretty nice. But wrong.
Man, you could get three giraffes for that. three healthy adult female giraffes.
Yeah. Oh, man. I just realized we probably need to move on here. Do y'all think we have time for any of these other ones? We're at 20 minutes, guys.
Your call.
How about this? We'll do the one conversation one, and it's this is not guessing a price. I'm just curious what y'all think. Like, what do y'all think it would go for? It's put into the auction, and it's been advertised that it's going to be in this auction on this day. An invisibility cloak is for sale, and they have mastered the art of creating this singular invisibility cloak. It works. You put it on, you're gone. How much do you think that's fetching?
Is it like a technological auction one, or like a Lord of the Rings kind of one?
That's a good question.
I don't know. Okay. I know that when you put it over you, you will. Okay. Can't be seen.
$850,000.
That's what you think that would fetch at auction?
Yeah. I was going to go $100 million.
I was too.
Oh, wow.
Because of the astronaut suit?
Dude,
you can have it at that price, man.
Okay. if everyone knew that the first ever functional invisibility cloak was for sale, I think it's bringing $100 to $250 million. Easy.
Especially if it was like a technology thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but like if it's just the first one.
R&D kind of like the...
Yeah. You can get one at Target now.
Yeah.
Yeah, much lower.
For much lower.
Much lower.
You just got to wait. Give it a few years and it's they'll be available for a couple hundred dollars. Oh, man, that was funny. All right, well, it's time to move on to our main discussion. All right, so it is episode 2, so we're talking about loving our neighbors as ourselves. And so it's from Matthew 22, Mark 12, and then honestly, it comes from Luke 10 as well. But it's kind of a different conversation there. And so last week we began with how to follow all the other commandments. It begins with loving the Lord your God. But right after that, he follows it up with to love your neighbor as yourself. And so let's start with this question. When the average reader first reads to love your neighbor, what might come to their mind? Like when they think of that idea, just love your neighbor, what do you think they're thinking about?
I think the average American reader probably imagines the neighborhood block they live on and being a warm and inviting neighbor to the people on all sides of you, keeping your yard mowed, respecting their privacy, inviting them over for a barbecue every now and then, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing. You know, those people that are kind of in your perimeter of, you know, where you're living and next door neighbors across the street, all that kind of stuff.
Yep. Yeah, general kindness.
Yeah.
And similar to you, like neighborhood, I put just smile and wave when you see them.
Yeah.
You know, you're cordial with people. And I put, and we'll get into this later, I think, but most people probably apply this to more often to personal loving relationships.
Hmm.
Like again, those neighbors you have, that you know well, that you're comfortable smiling at them and you're comfortable waving at them.
Yeah.
So
I don't want to downplay that too much because as a society, we've kind of forgotten how to do that. And like that can
that's
be
a great point.
That can kind of be an important part of your witness to the people living around you. Although I know we're going to go off in some different stuff today.
Yeah.
But like that is important.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thanks for adding that. Yeah. And we mentioned this, but Jesus follows this the commandment to love God with love your neighbor. Why do you think he does that? Like, why do you think this comes after loving your God? And I think we mentioned this last week, but if y'all wanted to touch on that a little bit before we continue.
Yeah, I think for me, one good thing to kind of maybe help me see that is just in my own kids. You know, it brings me great joy when they are loving one another.
Mm-hmm.
And so when my kids are getting along, man, that's so good to see. And as a father, that means a lot, and it brings me a lot of joy.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you know, when they don't do a good job of loving one another, that brings me some sadness, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think probably to some degree, the reason why Jesus wanted, why that's part of it, the command to love your neighbor is that's pleasing to the Lord.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Anything? I also want to point out, and I mentioned it last week, but he's quoting Leviticus 19. And so where this commandment comes from is he says to love your neighbor as yourself. And then there's a colon. And then he says, I am the Lord. Yahweh. I am Yahweh. Like, even there, he's connecting it to himself. So I think this is following the commandment to love God, because you can't do this. Like, you can't love others well if you aren't loving God. And they are perfectly married, because even John writes that if we say we walk in the light, but we hate our brother, we're still in darkness. Mm-hmm. And so if you're hating your brother, you're not loving God. But if you're not loving God, you can't love your brother. And so,
yeah, that's a good point to bring up, because just in my own life, I've noticed that when I have those moments of where I just feel bitter toward everyone, mm-hmm. or, you know, there's just something, it seems like something's wrong with everybody but me, you know, yeah. then when I'm in that place, then usually I can say, man, there's probably some distance in my own relationship with the Lord too. Mm-hmm. You know, like, maybe we're not as close, or I haven't spent time in the Word, or just, you know, haven't really taken time to acknowledge the Lord and respond to him. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes that's a good way to kind of just a status check of where I'm at, is how good of a job am I doing loving other people?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, you touched on it, but I think, you know, loving God first does orient us rightly and help us set our priorities in order, and that it's probably easier for us to love others the way that he intends us to once we've gotten that done.
Yeah. I like what you brought up, and I didn't plan on saying this, but just to apply that to something that actually happened, I had some hard conversations one day, and I was less than kind in some of my conversations. And I went home that night feeling justified, because in these conversations, I had said some things that I felt were true. And I think we'll get into this later, but I said some things that were true, but I felt distant from the Lord, and I felt distant from these, like, my brothers and sisters in Christ, whom I love, that I had these conversations with. And I actually felt justified in the, like, when I first left that night. It's like, why do I, like, I don't feel good. And that sounds weird, because I don't base, you know, conviction on feeling, but oftentimes it's a gut check. Like, there was a conviction I was feeling because of how I managed some conversations. And so the next day I had to ask for forgiveness from several people. And in that moment, I remember I called Holly, and I was like this, I knew and believed that that is what the Lord wanted me to do, and I felt freer as a result of it. So you're mm-hmm. talking about when you're in bitter, like, you're feeling bitter and you think there's something wrong with everyone else. I had one of those moments practically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I felt distant from them, and I felt distant from the Lord. And yet in my brain, I could justify some things, but knowing, like, I was not right. Like, I need to go restore some things. Just to,
well, and it's good when you have that, you know, that conviction to listen to that, mm-hmm. right? And then to offer that up to the Lord and say, God, like, what's going on here that I'm feeling this way, and what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
And so then to be able to go and to say, hey, there's some things we've got to clear up.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move to this one. What are some misconceptions people might have about, quote unquote, loving your neighbor? You know, and it probably applies to some voice, what we said at the beginning. It can include, you know, mm-hmm. what we might think of when we immediately think of love. But what are some misconceptions people might have about loving your neighbor?
I think it's easy to think that love is a synonym for other things that it's not. Mm. It's not a synonym for romance. It's not a synonym for agreeing about everything. It's not a synonym for endorsing everything. Mm-hmm. It's not the absence of hard conversations. I think love is actually, you know, being willing to step into difficult situations for the mm-hmm. benefit of another. And at the same time, I think the other misconception on the other side is often that it's okay to say, I'll love you if. I'll love you if you become more like me, or I'll love you if mm-hmm. you do the things that I agree with. And I don't think that word if goes with this kind of love either.
That's really good. So your first misconception you think is it involves, or
it's equal to,
they think it's easy, it and must it involves some difficult stuff.
Yeah.
And the second misconception is I'll love you it's if
conditional.
And yeah. That's mm-hmm. really good, Jeff.
I would say that love, and we touched on this a little bit last week, but love doesn't mean that you have to agree with everything someone does, mm-hmm. or that you have to affirm every decision that they make. Love doesn't mean that you have to change your convictions, and even your biblical convictions, more importantly, just because they don't align with somebody, someone else's And I don't think that friends should expect that of you. You know, I'm reminded of a lot of instances in Scripture. We see in the Old Testament where God, he loves Israel. And sometimes that love is expressed through discipline, and through the truth, right? God was, he was always present. He was always available, but he didn't change who he was in order that Israel would love him more.
Yeah.
You know, he let them wander at times, but we always see his compassion. We always see his mercy and his love. His love wasn't won or lost based on their actions, you know.
That's good. I'm reading Jeremiah right now, and I see that. Like, I was reading some things from, it's all over Jeremiah and other prophets as well, but I was like, holy, just check this out. Like, the things God is telling Jeremiah to go tell the people of Judah is just, I mean, it's very intense, very intense.
Well, it's kind of like what Jeff was saying, like that stepping into some of those hard things.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Really intense. He is judging this wickedness. But then, like you said, he comes back around, and here I am reading Jeremiah 29, and he's like, hey, but in 70 years, I'm going to bring you back. I'm going to restore you. Like, I love you. You are my people. And so, yeah, I think that's good to bring up. I would say, and this isn't necessarily real specific when it comes to a misconception, we'll get there. But I think love is one of those things that is like championed across the nation, like everywhere. Love is championed, but it's seldomly implemented, and it's rarely understood, like in the way Scripture defines it. Like, I just want to read this, like, because this is the most prominent passage on love in Scripture, from 1 Corinthians 13. When he says, love is patient, kind, not boastful, not envious, not arrogant, not rude, does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things, and never ends. And he has more to say about love than just that. He starts with saying, you can have faith to move mountains, but if you don't have love, you're nothing.
Yeah.
And so this is the love that Paul writes of. It's how he describes the love of Christ. It's the kind of love he's encouraging brothers and sisters in Christ to demonstrate toward one another. And so, again, I think it's championed. The word love is championed. But, like, this kind of love is seldomly implemented, I think, in the way that Christ calls us to. Also, in 1 John 3:16, he writes, by this we know love, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. Like, that's hard. Lay down your life for your fellow Christians. And so I think there's a tension because biblical love requires something of us.
Mm-hmm.
Take 1 Corinthians 13. Patience is uncomfortable. Rejoicing with the truth, that's not always comfortable in our world. Believing the best about others. He says believes all things, which is kind of a there's debate around what he means there, but most people take it to mean that, like, it's believing the best for someone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That can be uncomfortable. Enduring all things, very uncomfortable. And so, like, loving our brothers and sisters involves this. It requires something of us. I feel like I'm talking a lot. But then James 5:19-20, he talks about, my brothers, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from his wandering will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. That's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is a, Jeff, I see you wandering. I set out, like, hey, Jeff, let's sit down, talk. Like, what are you going through? You know, you and I have this good conversation and trying to bring you back. That conversation is probably very uncomfortable.
Yep.
And so that's what I mean by, like, I think it is championed, but the idea of I think it's rarely understood well.
Yeah, I think the common misconception of love is that you won't have that kind of conversation.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Because it would be unloving.
Correct.
To do that.
That I would rather support you and you know, and affirm this mm-hmm. direction you're going. That's why I think love is often taught as affirmation. It certainly includes difficult conversations. It includes mm-hmm. like, hey, let's sit down. Let's talk. I've noticed some things.
Mm-hmm.
And hoping, by the way, that they would do that for me. if they ever notice that about me. But anyways, one thing I would do want to note on that is I think many people shy away from difficult conversations, like we were just saying, in the name of love, that it would be unloving for me to do what we just talked about. And yet, like we've said, shining light in darkness is loving, but the way in which you do is also important.
Mm-hmm.
And this actually goes back to what we were talking about, I think, Blake, you were on that, and Josh is on that Christ-like friendship conversation. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about wounds of a friend. Like it's important in how we approach each other, our brothers and sisters in Christ, and remembering things like Ephesians 4:15, but speaking the truth in love, or your speech being seasoned with salt. So
I think who you are also, do you have an established relationship?
Yeah.
Do they know that you love them? Have you demonstrated that you love them?
Yep.
Causes even the same words, even with the same tone, to be understood and heard differently.
Yeah. One more misconception, I think, is that if your love is not well received, you actually weren't loving.
Hmm.
We can't guarantee the response of another person. We are to love people well, but it doesn't always mean that we're pleasing them. Galatians 1:10 is one of those verses that's very popular, where Paul writes, for am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ. Paul wrote that right after calling out false doctrine. So his point is, hey, congregation, like you Galatians, I care so much about you. I care really deeply about you. What I'm like calling out this false doctrine is going to be uncomfortable and won't please man. But I'm not to do that. And out of love for you, I'm a servant of Christ and I'll promote the true gospel. And so, anyways. Would y'all add anything to that? Okay. So next is, who is your neighbor? He tells us to love our neighbors as ourselves, but who is that?
Yeah, this kind of gets into what you had mentioned earlier with the Good Samaritan in Luke 10 and where the lawyer asks Jesus, who's my neighbor?
Yeah.
And so he goes there and he asks that question. Mm-hmm. And then Jesus gives the parable of the Good Samaritan and kind of sums that up, really. And, you know, I think you have a group of people who, you know, in that parable, you have the priest and the Levite who did not give aid to the man who was beaten and robbed. And but then you have the Samaritan who does and who actually provides for the man and, you know, tells the innkeeper, I guess, that, you know, whatever charges, you know, I'll take care of that as well. So he takes care of him, even knowing that he wouldn't be there for however the duration of his stay.
Yeah, like goes above and beyond.
And, you know, then Jesus comes back and essentially says, you know, who was more neighborly, right? And with that, he says, well, the one who showed mercy was the one who is more neighborly. And so it almost associates this idea of who is your neighbor, not in a sense of like the physical definition or the person of a neighbor, but almost more, it goes above and beyond that. It transcends that to a level of a behavioral thing, of a heart attitude, of how are we treating people?
Yeah.
Are we showing compassion for them? And I think that's what's so cool about how Jesus answers that question.
Yeah.
It's like he says, well, who's your neighbor? Well, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, like you need to treat everybody this way. And so he transcends that question of, I'm not just going to tell you, oh, this person's your neighbor and this person's not your neighbor, because if he does that, then it gives him grounds to say, well, I don't have to treat this person this way. And I can show favoritism to this person because they're my neighbor. That person's not my neighbor. So I don't need to treat them with the same love and respect that I do this person, because this is my core group of people, you know?
Yeah.
So
I was thinking a lot about that same parable when you asked that question. And I do think what I was struggling with, I think there is like a geographical or location component to this.
Sure. Yep.
It's not everything. Like at one level, it's all of our fellow humanity. But like the religious leader walks in to the guy's sphere.
Yeah.
And goes, ew, and goes to the other side.
I saw him.
And the next guy walks in also, and the third guy walks in. And so, like, Jesus isn't actually talking about the guy that was, you know, 10 miles down the road. It's these people that came into that guy's sphere of influence and being. And so, like, no, I don't think it just means the people that live next door to you, but it's like the people that are in your circle, in your family, in your friend group, in your community, that you see at the store, that you see at the gym.
And the ones you're running across.
Like, you have some level of something where you're relational with them, where you've got a stronger call to do this than for the people that you're not connected to at all.
Yeah,
I think one thing that social media and the internet have done to us is they expose us to the needs of people that are way outside of that circle for us. There's a term for it, compassion fatigue, which is like, oh, I'm supposed to care and hurt for this person over here that I've never met. I'm supposed to care and hurt for this person over here.
Yes.
This guy that took the expedition to Antarctica and only, you know, budgeted $17,000 for it and died in the ocean or whatever. Like, I'm supposed to care about all of that. But I think God has wired us to care about people and needs that we can actually address.
Yeah, that's great.
Like this guy that lives right down the road from me, you know, hundreds of years ago, his barn burned down, and like I can go help him and his family. And so I do think there is that.
Yeah.
Like they're in my circle.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Without being insulated and like, no, this is my circle. Right. But like they're in my world.
And oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, you know, I think the parable backs that up because it's the guy, the Levite and the priest, they all, it was as they were going, right? Mm-hmm. As they were going, they were faced with this situation with this man who was in need and needed their help. And so it wasn't necessarily that he was outside of their vantage point in some distant, faraway place. I mean, it was as they were, and it kind of reminds me of the Great Commission, right? Of just as you go.
Yeah, that's good.
Therefore, and make disciples.
Yeah. And the people group obviously matters here too, right? Because you've got the man who's probably, he doesn't necessarily say, but probably a Jewish man. But even then, it doesn't necessarily matter. Why? Because the hero in the story, all his listeners would have been like,
he's the outcast.
Yeah, it's the Samaritan.
Yeah.
And so you've got the priest who he's propped up. You've got the Levite who are like the priestly helpers. They're propped up.
He comes from a good family.
Yes.
The Levite does.
They're both propped up. They're like, surely those two will stop and help. Mm-hmm. Like, surely they're the example. He's like, no, the one you consider an outcast, an outsider, is the hero of this story. Like, that's the neighbor. And so it made me go back to Matthew 5 because your neighbor can include your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Matthew 5, he also said to love our enemies and to pray for those who persecute you. You may have down the street in your sphere of influence knowing somebody who really hates your guts. Mm-hmm. And yet we're still called to love that person. In fact, in Matthew 5, Jesus makes this clear when he says, if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? He says, even the tax collectors do that.
Yep.
That doesn't take much effort on your part to love the people who love you. And that's when he tells us to love our enemies. But I think it's great, guys. So how do we actually do it? How do we actually obey this commandment, especially, or not especially, but just at least also considering when it comes to loving those difficult for us to love?
Well, and I think it kind of goes back to what we mentioned earlier, that it comes with a good understanding of what love is and what that looks like, because it, If you have a misunderstanding of it, then it gets hard when you're trying to love those who are at odds with you or your enemies or, you know. But having an like believing the best, I can do that for people that I disagree with.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, maybe I don't agree with it, but maybe I can say, well, from their perspective, I understand that maybe they're just, that's what they believe, and I choose to believe what's best, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't really know where I was going with that. But to some degree, I think that that's what makes it hard to live out is when we don't really understand what it is in the first place.
Absolutely.
I
think that I'm just going back to Matthew 5 because it's helpful. He actually gives us some specific ways to do it. Like he tells us to pray for our enemies. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's actually like a tangible, mm-hmm. a tangible example that we love our neighbors. You pray. He also says greet them, which is kind of an interesting, like, why is he so specific about that? Like, we're supposed to greet them well, like mm-hmm. greet them cordially. So greet them kindly, which actually goes back to maybe what someone might think of, right? Waving and smiling, like you're going to greet them cordially. Romans 12 adds some to this when Paul writes, feed them and give them something to drink. Mm-hmm. Like, so there's this willingness to give to them, to your neighbors, showing them mercy. And so these are just some tangible examples that scripture gives us of how we can love our neighbors. Yeah. The Good Samaritan, again, gives us some practical advice in what this might look like.
Well, and it goes back to Leviticus 19:2, not 19:2, but 19 right.
yeah.
as well.
Yes, yeah, yeah. T-O-O.
yes, yeah. two. But when it's that call to love others as you love yourself, you know, kind of going back to what you were just saying, yep. you're going to take care of your basic needs. Mm-hmm. You're not going to neglect yourself, yep. right? And so I think that that's part of it too, is just loving others as you would love yourself. You know, yeah. don't neglect people.
Yep.
God cares about people. I think we need to understand that we are all created in His image, and so whether that person is your enemy or not, he or she is still an image bearer, mm-hmm. and so we need to treat them as an image bearer.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You asked about loving difficult people as well. I think in part this commandment is really targeted at loving the difficult people, because like you said, it's easy to love those who love you. Mm-hmm. And in like a school situation, you know, you've got somebody who smells funny, like love them anyway. You've got somebody who is unpopular, love them anyway. Mm-hmm. And yet don't let that be pity, mm-hmm. right? Or mm-hmm. sympathy. Those aren't the words there. And it gets even harder when they actually like are rude to you mm-hmm. or unkind to you. Or say that they hate you.
Yeah,
that's even harder. Yep. And so I think at some level it's like our world wants us to put up these walls, be in these categories where we celebrate all the people that are within us, and we divide ourselves from the people that are outside of that. And I think this is a call to actively work against that.
Yeah, in schools, like when division shoots up quickly. Like even just some if students were like, well, I'm still a little confused. What does this look like? Here's some things I might say. Yeah. And I'd say, if you find yourself slandering or gossiping about somebody
yeah.
and you are slandering their name, that's something that's a check on your heart.
Yeah.
Like that is a reflection of what you believe about that person. And it is not love. Like that is directly opposed to love. Two, if you think about this person, are you bitter and resentful? Then you probably need to forgive them. Like, you need to forgive them in your own heart, in your own mind. Like, there is internal work that needs to be done in order, in some ways, to do this other stuff, right? So, like, that, again, that's why I think it begins with you loving God. Like, you taking some of this resentment, you taking some of this bitterness, you putting to death some of this slander or this gossip is actually loving God. Because mm-hmm. we talked about how part of loving God is keeping His commandments. And He tells us, hey, put those things off. Like, get rid of those things. You're in Christ now. And so you submit those things to the Lord, and then you're actually more well-equipped to, when you walk past them in the hallway, smile and wave at them, you know, greet them cordially. You're able to pray for them in a different way. When you think about them, maybe it's not as bitter or resentful. You just want them to know Jesus better. And you can be a picture of Christ's love to them, I think. I don't think it's easy, but in a way that you weren't able to prior to submitting these things to the Lord. That's why, again, begins with dependence and prayer and asking the Holy Spirit to guide you. But, what happens in us, around us, and like in others when we live out this commandment, like when we're intentional to do this, to truly love people, we're willing to sacrifice time. We're going to pray for these people. Maybe someone sees us having a loving conversation with someone across the cafeteria or whatever, that they're like, I thought they were at odds with one another. Like, what does that do? Like, what kind of testimony is that?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly encourages us, you know, that we would want to pursue that. I think part of that, too, is John 15, And yeah, we talked about that last time too, but Jesus calls his disciples to keep his commandments. And then he says, you know, the commandment is that I want you to love others as I have loved you. And that if you do this, that the love of Christ, that you are abiding in the love of Christ, and we're actually called friends of God.
Yeah.
And so what I would say is when we live this out, we are following the commands of Christ. We are doing what he has called us to do in loving others. And as a result of that, you know, like you said, it does begin with this dependence on the Lord. Mm-hmm. But when we carry that out, and then when we love others, I think it also strengthens that fellowship that we have with the Lord, that it grows our relationships, and that it grows our relationship and our fellowship with the Lord, and that those things grow deeper because of the way that, again, we are treating our fellow image bearers.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, you know, God is love, and Jesus is the ultimate embodiment of that love. And so for the part of the Christian life that is becoming more and more Christ-like, to love reflects him better into our community and the world around us, I think, for the good of everybody.
Yeah. John 13:35 says, "By this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." It is a witness to others who watch and see this, and it sanctifies us. And
you know, to some degree, it's kind of like what we're the World Cup. You know, have you seen all those videos that are just, you haven't seen any of those
videos?
I'm
not a World Cup person.
Well, I wasn't either, it's just cool to see everybody, you know,
unify around it.
Unified. You know, and it, you know, when you have social media and you have what seems to be a lot of voices talking about how bad things are. But then when you see some of these videos of people just singing songs in these huge sold out arenas, and you hear them kind of celebrating, and people of all different, obviously, you know, from all these different countries coming together, and it's kind of like, oh, things maybe they're not as bad as I think they are, you know? But seeing everybody celebrate that is kind of, you know, and so it makes you want to be united with people and not create this spirit of divisiveness.
Yeah. That is Colossians 2:2. Paul literally writes, "I want them to be encouraged and knit together by strong ties of love." I want them to be knit together in love, like united through love. Anyway,
that's great.
Made me think of it. Okay, let's see. Okay, so Blake, you actually touched on this earlier, and we don't necessarily have to spend a lot of time here, but it's important, right? When he says, love your neighbor as yourself. He doesn't end with just love your neighbor, but as yourself. And I think you touched on this. I thought what you said was really good. And so does that expand the meaning of this commandment? Like what would you say about that addition?
Yeah, I think that is such an interesting question. You know, some of us read a book a little while ago that kind of talked on some of the same thing. Like there is an assumption here that you do have love for yourself, because he wants you to reflect that to the people around you. And so, number one, if you're struggling with things like, oh, God could never love me, or I'm just worthless, like there's not really a lot in there for you to turn around and love others with. So you do need to think about that. But I think the people that he's addressing this to, Pharisees and the legalists, they have maybe the worst form of self-love, like the narcissism, and so like self-protection, self-serving, self-defense. And what he's saying, like to them specifically, like protect, serve, defend these other people that aren't like you. And I think when you do that, it actually chips away at some of the self-love that you've got that's maybe a little misguided in these ways.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Last question. Do any of y'all, like, can any of y'all just personally recall a time when you really felt loved this way? I'm sure we could probably, you might have been able to think of several, but like, is there any time that just uniquely impacted you?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, just going back to the parable that we were talking about in Luke 10, I think there was a time, you know, in the past few years where I kind of felt like the guy on the side of the road. And I remember I had a friend who doesn't live here, but just called me. And man, we talked for, you know, off and on just throughout that whole time, and still do. But And so, you know, and obviously our friendship goes back for years. And so there was that comfort and there was that trust that had been built up over time. And so he could ask and he could press things in ways that others couldn't. Mm-hmm. But just his ability to say at the end of the conversation, "Hey, can I pray for you?" You know, and he didn't have any magical words or anything that just kind of snapped me out of it. But just his presence, mm-hmm. And just his ability to be there and to be somebody who it made me want to do that, but for him as well, but also for others in my life. Because you're right, like it, you know, it's a hard thing to know how to do. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of it just involves us showing up, just involves us being present. And that's what he was. He was just present.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, you said you may have all sorts of examples. And as I was thinking about this, I realized how often I give off like, "Don't love me. Mm. Don't invest in me. I'm fine. Yeah. I don't need you to do that.
I relate to that.
Let me do that for you, but don't love me." And so like, I realized how far down I've taken people's potential to do that in my life, which I think is also wrong for me to do that. But I've got a friend specifically I was thinking of. It's an older man that I have lunch with from time to time. And every time we talk, no matter what I was carrying when I came in, no matter what I dumped on him during our conversation, I always leave feeling valued and encouraged. Mm-hmm. And then when I thank him for investing that in me and doing that, he always says, no, it was me who was blessed mm-hmm. by our time mm-hmm. together. And it's just so encouraging. And as Blake said with his friend also, like, it makes you want to do that for others.
Yeah.
It kind of leads to reproducing that into other people around you.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
And that's one of the reasons I want to share these stories.
Yeah.
Because as you tell these, like, these are the things that have impacted us.
Yeah.
And we understand, like, wow, like, that made me feel loved and warm, and it makes me want to go love other people in that same way.
Yep.
The first one was just my wife. It was, there's probably several of these, but I was rude when I showed up. I was impatient is a better word, which is rude. I was impatient and rude. And I just, I really wasn't being patient with her or our kids, and the house was a mess. And I just, you know, just start picking up, but I'm doing so in a way that is incredibly unloving. Like, you may be like, oh, you know, he's picking up the house and he's cleaning up. Man, I was doing it like someone who's just upset.
You were anger cleaning?
Yes, anger cleaning. And Holly, like, if I were Holly and Holly was clean like this, I think I might have grown and like, why is she doing this? And I would have, you know, been frustrated or whatever. And Holly, I sit down and she's like, "Hey, how can I serve you? Like, hey, go take a seat. Let me take care of this. How can I serve you?" And that just sticks with me because I'm like, I was very unlovable at that moment. Holly had the freedom to grow in her, like, he's being ridiculous. Like, he needs to take a breath and calm down, and could have approached me that way. And she had the right to do that. But to put her arm on my arm and be like, "Hey," it was kind of like a take a breath moment. But, "Hey, go sit down. How can I serve you right now?" Like, that just, disarmed me is a good word. Like, all this anger or frustration or impatience, whatever it is, I was like, and then I feel conviction. I feel like relieved and loved, but there is this healthy conviction. Like, that's the Lord loving me through my wife and growing me through my wife.
That's so great, because that's almost that goes back to that almost answers the question that you asked earlier about how do you love difficult people?
Yeah.
Not saying that you're a difficult person.
I can be very difficult.
Or that you're unloving.
Yeah.
But in that moment, it's like, how do you love those who are difficult?
Yes.
And that's such a good picture of what it looks like with an appropriate definition of like what love is. Like, she understood what love looked like in that moment to say, "Hey, I got this. Like, how can I help you?" Mm-hmm. You know? And so how can you love those who are difficult? Maybe it looks like you coming alongside them and saying, "Hey, what can I do? How can I just calm me down for a little bit?"
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Okay. So what is one thing you hope someone listening would take away from this conversation?
I think, and man, this tends to be my takeaway from every podcast. It's okay to not always get it right.
Yeah.
And it's okay to kind of stumble your way through it. And I say that because I'm still trying to figure out figure it out of like what it looks like to really love my neighbor and to love them as I love myself. Because sometimes I don't do a good job of that either. And sometimes I don't know what that looks like. And so, you know, sometimes if someone just said, hey, what does it look like to really love your neighbor? I'd be like, I don't know. You know, like I could get there. But, and so I would just say that it's a process and it's okay to not always just have it on, have it right there ready to go. And so what I would say is continue to lean into the Lord, like you said earlier. Mm-hmm. Depend on him. Don't depend on what the world says about love or what it looks like, or it has to be this way. You've always got to affirm, or you've always got to, you know, there is a biblical way to do it. And so lean into that and understand that as you lean into that, you're still going to have questions and you're still not going to do it perfectly, but you're going to the source of it, not to the world's misunderstanding and misinterpretation of it,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, and I would add the partner to Blake's, you don't always have to get this right, which is when you're ready to give it a try.
Get it right.
Give it a try.
Yeah.
I would say, like, open your eyes, maybe identify that one person who's in your world. Maybe they go to school with you, maybe they're at the coffee shop that you hang out at, maybe they play on a team with you. Mm-hmm. And this person who either, like, the world or the news or social media or even something like down in your heart somewhere kind of tells you, like, I shouldn't love that person. Mm-hmm. And do something to serve them.
Yeah.
And just try it.
Yeah. I'd say that two small steps is consider how you think of them when you see them. If they're not a believer, understand they are made in the image of God and Christ died for them. Mm. Like, immediately, that's going to just shift how you consider this person.
Yep.
And if
that's
you
great.
Know they're a brother or sister in Christ, know that you're going to be in eternity someday together, worshiping Jesus side by side.
Yeah.
Just, again, something that shifts your mindset. And then the second thing is pray for them. And just pray for them. That can often do wonders for my heart when I just pray for this person. And so, Blake, Jeff.
It's great.
Appreciate you guys for joining me.
Thanks.
For this conversation. Yeah. It was fun.
Anytime.
Y'all were really bad at the game today.
I'm going to go buy a giraffe.
Hey, when you do, let me come right in.
We're a porta potty.
That would be awesome. All right. See you guys.